Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jamie. Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. Extremely mild Thursday afternoon. It's mad out there, isn't it? Like 16, 17 degrees. If you want to contact the programme about anything, including the weather, it's 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Well, we're definitely in the season now. Yes, 'tis the season to be jolly. And 'tis the season when the ads come on the telly. And the John Lewis ad is, I suppose it's the one that every other ad is measured by, isn't it? It's the yardstick of Christmas ads. And they've had good ones and bad ones and in-between ones over the years. The new one landed today. That's the word they use. Landed. It dropped. So you can watch it online. And the story is, it's very poignant. It pulls at all the heartstrings, as you would expect. There's a man who is going to foster a child, himself and his wife. That only becomes obvious at the end. Sorry about spoiling it for you. And he knows that the girl, the teenage girl who they're fostering, is a skateboarder. So he decides to prepare himself and to ingratiate himself to their foster child, foster person, that he's going to learn how to skateboard. So it's all that. And he's a man in his 40s, I would imagine. He's trying to learn how to skateboard, doesn't do it very well, falls over a number of times. And in the background is a version of Blink 182's All the Small Things. And that's playing in the background. Watching,
waiting. How did it go?
Commiserating, say it ain't so. I'll not go. Turn the lights off.
It's emotional. You might even cry. And they're supporting fostering in the UK. So that's a good thing as well. Mike Geyer, he's interesting. He performed in America's Got Talent twice, I think, over the years. The first time in season 12, whenever that was. He's the front man of a band called Puddle's Pity Party. Be careful with that. He's 6'8" and he appears as one of those Pagliacci type clowns. There's me saying it with confidence as if I know what it is. But it's you know, the white makeup and all that. And remember Dice Man, who used to hang around Dublin, a bit like that, but 6'8", has that amazing voice. He's a man in his late 50s, and he does the version of Blink's 182s that's featured on the John Lewis ad for 2022. And over the years, they've had some brilliant ones. Ellie Goulding with her version of Elton John's Your Song.
And you can tell everybody, this is your song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how wonderful life is.
Just in case you don't know that it's emotional, there's the quiver in the voice. Just the signal that you have to get emotional. Lily, that was my favourite, I think, Lily Allen's.
And if you have a minute, why don't we go talk about it somewhere on the window? This could be the end of it.
Again, the quiver. Have you noticed the quiver, yes? Was this one last year's one? There's the quiver. You spot the quiver. There it is. You have to have the quiver. Celeste broke with tradition in 2020 as she sang her own song.
Nothing better in this world to get than happiness. If I give this gift to you, wouldn't everybody
no obvious quiver there. That's Celeste and a song from the John Lewis ad from 2020. They nearly have a compilation album there now, don't they? And of course there was Elbow did Golden Slumbers, the Beatles song. That was nice too. While we're on Christmas, Helen O'Sullivan has been on to ray@rte.ie. Dear Ray, you won't remember me. I'm Helen O'Sullivan, and I entered a competition you ran on your programme where people were invited to write in thanking people who performed kind acts during the terrible days of COVID. Well, I wrote you telling you how my daughter Anne-Marie, who lives in Maryland in the USA, telephoned me here in County Leitrim every day for months during COVID just to chat and help pass the time. You gifted Anne-Marie an Aer Lingus travel voucher to the value of €1,400. Well, Anne-Marie finally got home using the voucher on the 25th of September 2022. Her visit was delayed as she changed jobs and went to the end of the queue for time off. I'm attaching a bad photo taken at Dublin Airport at 5 o'clock in the morning, 25th September, when she and her husband finally arrived home. We are the pair in the middle. Hobie's on the left and Auntie Anne is on the right. I want to thank you for the wonderful prize and to let you know how much we appreciated the reunion. Keep it up, whatever we're doing. Yeah, that's Helen O'Sullivan, which is lovely. It's lovely to hear people say thank you. And that was part of our big Christmas thank you, which is returning very shortly. And as Helen outlined, it's not specific to COVID, but we invite you to nominate somebody that has helped you out. Now, it could be this year. It could be a lifetime of helping out. It could be a neighbour. It could be a daughter, like in Helen's case. It could be a parent. It could be a friend. It could be anybody. And we get you to write in an email. Tell us about the person. And then we go through them all because we get hundreds and we nominate, you know, five or six. We get you on the phone and then you help us to surprise the person. We ring them. They don't know who I am and all that sort of thing. And then we surprise them and we give them a little prize. In Helen's case, we gave Anne-Marie, her daughter, that 1400 voucher for Aer Lingus, which they've cashed in recently. So that's, I'll tell you more about that as we get closer to Christmas. We spotted this gorgeous initiative that launched this morning. It's called carepack.ie. And the idea is to connect residents in nursing homes with people on the outside. So a kind volunteer, somebody who would like to write to them or send them in a little gift for Christmas. It last ran 2 years ago when over 1,300 care home residents received a little gift from someone for Christmas. And such was its success. It's back this year and registration opened today. It's a really lovely idea. You can go to the website and select the county you'd like to register with. And they have such gorgeous imagery on the site. It's such a lovely, kind idea. And Christmas can be a lonely time for many, and I suppose particularly people in nursing homes. So carepack.ie. And you never know, you might start a friendship that would last a long time. And it was set up by Geraldine Monaghan and Stephen Griffin. Carepack.ie. Science Week starts next week. And I see Anna Daly is fronting RTÉ's programmes. It was Luke O'Neill, wasn't it, and Liz Bonin last year, maybe the year before. But as part of Science Week, they're looking to find Ireland's favourite fossil. Yeah, you heard me correctly. They're looking to find Ireland's favourite fossil. I think they might be the most interesting fossil. So a team at University College Cork has prepared a shortlist of 10 of Ireland's unique and interesting fossils. And the voting will be open on Sunday and then run until the 20th. So Science Week starts next Monday the 14th. So you can vote for Ireland's favourite fossil. And good luck to the person who has to, you know, because they'll have to announce this, I suppose, on the telly, will they? Good luck to the person who has to go through. Because it's Archaeopteryx. Say it fast and with confidence. That's a frond-like frond-like leaves similar to a fern, and it's found at Kiltorkin Quarry in County Kilkenny. Then there's Cooksonia. It looks like moss. That's found in County Tipperary. Crinoid, marine animals, found at Hookhead Lighthouse, County Wexford. And we'll be talking more about that when Owen Colfer drops in for a chat after 4 o'clock. Echinoderm. They're like sea urchins. Ichthyosaur. Extinct marine reptiles, they're found in Northern Ireland. Lepidodendron. See, these, like, it's fine me, I'm taking my time, but imagine, you know, live television with the autocue and all that going through all those. I would suggest to them, if they're doing it, to pre-record it. Olive lights, trilobites, and the Valencia trackway. I think they're the only ones I've seen, you know, where they left the sea and came on to land. And they're quite impressive down in Valencia. So Ireland's favourite fossil. While we're on science, if there is intelligent life out there, and if they decided to contact us, there's no protocol in place. So Like, if a message came from outer space, nobody would know what to do, believe it or not. Like, there's no pack, there's no file, there's nobody to go to, there's no ambassador for extraterrestrials in the world. You know, we could miss an opportunity to be in contact with ET. So, as a result, a number of scientists have got together. So there's a policy, a team of policy experts and scientists have united to establish a protocol for the entire world. As I said, there's no current protocol. So they're going to get together, have meetings and decide what to do if hypothetically somebody or something from out there contacted us, what would we do? Which we probably wouldn't understand what they're saying, you know. How do you respond to that? I suppose. They could be singing or declaring war or anything, and you could be doing anything in response. But anyway, that's a bit of crack, isn't it? 51551 ray@rte.ie. Sad to see that Gary Roberts, the former member of the Boomtown Rats, died yesterday at the age of 72. And on social media, the band said, on a clear spring evening in 1975 in a pub in Dunleary, County Dublin, Gary became the founding member of what turned out to be a great rock and roll band, driven largely by that sound of his, a storm of massive considered noise that punched out from his overtaxed amplifiers and which animated not just the rest of the group, but audiences he played to around the world. They were brilliant. They were brilliant. It is embarrassing, but I lip-synced to that in the CYMS Hall in Kildare with a pyjamas top on. Yeah, it was a variety concert and I was in the Scouts at the time and I was pretending to be Bob Geldof. Yeah, and the great thing about them, they've never lost that punk, that punkness. Geldof and the lads. And of course, the first song ever played on Coming At You Radio 2 by the late Larry Gogan was a Boomtown Rat song. Was this their biggest hit?
And we've been.
So Gary Roberts, may he rest in peace. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. That could have been their biggest hit. I don't like Mondays. Or maybe Rat Trap. Dustin did a version of Rat Trap with Bob Geldof. Wow. Yeah, that sounds great on the radio. John Lewis ad singer sounds like Jack L. He does. And I just got a Facebook memory from 7 years ago today. It was on my dashboard showing a temperature of 17 degrees. At 6:45 a.m. So the weather has been mental for a while, says Barry in Wexford. Good attempt, Ray, but that E-C-H-I-N-O-D-E-R-M is pronounced echinoderm as opposed to echinoderm. Alicia, there's always one Alicia. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for correcting me. Kieran says, my favourite John Lewis ad song was Gabrielle Alpin and singing The Power of Love by Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Not a very high quiver quota on that one. There's a little bit of quivering. It's hard to outdo the original of that, isn't it? I came in from work and thought I was listening to the Clangers. Maybe that's what to play to any alien life out there. And Neve says, I'd love to enter the short queue, long queue quiz. How do I put my name in the hat? Funny you should ask. Funny you should ask. Listen up, Neve. You and anybody else, we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each on songs, news reports, TV shows and movies, and there is a prize. And it's a two-night stay for two people in any one of the four-star Ainua Collection hotels, and they're all over the country. Kilkenny Chic Hibernian Hotel, Tullamore Court Hotel, the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, the Fairways in Dundalk, Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. Ainua.ie for more information. There's something for everyone to enjoy. And here's today's qualifying question. Which Irish boy band have announced they'll be heading or even headlining this year's New Year's Eve Festival in Dublin? Which Irish boy band have announced they'll be headlining this year's New Year's Eve Festival in Dublin? 0818715925. That's 0818715925. And the computer says no, but it would soon say yes. Thank you.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or text to 51551. Now, Pat Lawless joins me on the phone. We'll find out where he is shortly, but a reminder about Pat, we've been tracking his progress the last while. He's 66, he's a solo sailor, and he hoped to become the first Irish person ever to sail solo non-stop, and that's important, non-stop around the world, in a sailing race called the Golden Globe Race. Pat was amongst the leaders sailing in fourth place in the South Atlantic, but unfortunately, things haven't been going according to plan. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
I'm sorry about this now, because in talking to you, I realised how much this meant to you.
Oh, yeah. I got over it. It was 5 or 6 days ago. Myself steering broke, and one bush in one bearing, and I was out of the race, yeah. So I'm in Cape Town, and a beautiful place, and my wife is coming down, so
not
the end of the world.
Not the end of the world. But just to remind people, your dad has gone around the world solo, your brother has done it, but this was sort of one step up from what they've achieved, because you were hoping to do it non-stop. 2 months in...
Yeah, well, my father went around, and in his third attempt he got around, he had a good few stops.
Okay.
Peter is... He's doing it at the moment. He hasn't done it yet.
Oh, he hasn't done it yet. Okay, yeah. So it's a family thing. It's a family thing anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
And just tell people about the preparation you put in. How many years were you preparing for this?
Four years.
Four years.
The preparation was actually an interesting part of the journey. And even the 2 months sailing down here, 2 months in a bit, it was fantastic and a huge learning curve. Actually, 2 months on your own is interesting. You'll be more lonely than you think.
Yeah.
And it was, I've learned so much on it, and it was a great journey, but it was better than heartbreaking. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're alone, you say, and alone with your thoughts. And how was that? I'd say that's the longest you've been alone with your thoughts in your life.
Ever.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I'm not great at meditation, but I do transcendental meditation. Just you pick a word and repeat it just to try and clear your brain. But then I started thinking other words, like anything, love, happiness, potatoes. And I'd meditate on that word for a while, and things you'd never do at home. It changes you, and I've got softer. I've got more emotional.
Yeah.
And that.
More in touch with your feelings.
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, the fact that you're alone and you have all that time to think, and you think about people and the really good people, and it gives you time to think, yeah, a lot of time actually.
But it is what
caught me unawares. I was more lonely than I expected. Maybe lonely is a long word, more maudlin or something, but...
Maudlin, right, okay, yeah. Because you had done a solo trip before, but it was only 2 or 3 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've done a few, just training for this race.
Yes. And of course, Rita is coming down to you, which is great, down in Cape Town. That's lovely. How long would it have taken you if you were to complete the race?
Oh, 8 to 9 months.
Okay.
11 months was the longest in the last race. The last race was the second one.
Okay.
The first one was 1968. And another interesting thing, I really enjoyed the celestial navigation, the sun, moon and stars. I didn't expect to enjoy it so much. That was a lovely challenge and nice.
So you were doing it old school. You were doing it old school.
Yeah. There's no modern equipment, no water makers. It's an old-fashioned vintage race, which makes it affordable. It's all good. And I really did enjoy doing that. About 4 hours a day, actually.
Yeah.
because you do more than the sights. You're trying to plot the fastest course, and that was a good challenge and doable. I was kind of nervous before the start when I behaved like, but it was no problem.
And it was sort of the equivalent of the automatic pilot that let you down.
Yeah. It's a mechanical steering system, and just one bushing. I'm trying to take it off at the moment, as a crowd here can fix this and make bushings, and like you'll need, it's a big job, it's nothing you could do with tea. I really enjoyed the sail in. I was 6 days with no self-steering, and I got sheet and tiller working well. And yeah, that's another thing anyway, if you're into sailing, it's a sheet and tiller working really well. I couldn't do it that way like that, yeah.
And you were in fourth place, Pat.
Yeah. And the others are only short bit ahead of me. And my boat is a Southern Ocean boat, like, I reckon I could have caught some of them. And that's actually, as the race went on, it was about finishing rather than winning.
Yes.
And I thought I would finish, and then I didn't. And I spent 2 days crying.
Yeah, so you, as you say, you're over the worst of it. And you're looking forward to Rita coming down.
Not crying.
Yeah.
There's running down my face,
What was the first thing you know, 2 months out there, and you were on terra firma then for the first time 6 days ago. Was there one thing you were looking forward to doing, or?
Just getting the boat fixed up.
That's all right, okay. Home. So you weren't looking forward to a burger or a pint or something like that, no?
Well, I left everything to my wife, my phone, my money and everything. So I have plenty of food left, money. And she's coming now.
Okay, you poor man. So, can we send John? I can revolute you a few quid if you're stuck.
No, I'm joking. I thought I just called down and he told me the Munster match is on tonight.
It is. Yes. And you're in the right place, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to go up and watch it. So I'll open up a tab in the club here.
Yeah, so Munster v South Africa tonight.
I just found out a few minutes ago that time. So
that's something to look forward to. Listen, Pat, thanks for talking to us, and really sorry that you didn't make it further, but you, still a great achievement to get the boat out there and sailing for 2 months and in fourth place.
I wanted to keep going,
Just Claire has been on from Copenhagen. She says, Pat Lawless has a serious amount of fans all around the world because he's such a talented sailor and a lovely human being. He did us all proud. Kudos to Pat and his wife Rita and their whole family. So there you go. Mind yourself, Pat. See you now. Bye. Hey. Bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're looking for people to take part in our quiz after 4 o'clock. Today's qualifying question is this. Which Irish boy band have announced they'll be headlining this year's New Year's Eve festival in Dublin? 0818715925, 0818715925, and we could be talking to you after 4 o'clock. Imelda Wickham joins me in studio. How are you doing, Imelda?
Very well, thank you, Ray.
Thanks for coming in. You were prison chaplain in Wheatfield Prison for 20 years.
Correct.
When did you retire?
I didn't actually retire,
right.
But when the pandemic came, I was one of the people who was told to cocoon. So I was there. I had retired actually in 2018, but I was continuing to do voluntary work.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking about leaving, but hadn't got around to it. So I think I'd still be there, only for the pandemic, and I had to leave. So I came out in 2019.
So 20 years going into a prison most days of the week.
Yes.
Right.
And I loved every moment of it. I really did.
And as a chaplain in a prison, you have access all areas.
Absolutely, yeah. That's one of the privileges of being a chaplain. Once the men are unlocked, you have access to all of their, you know, you can go into cells, you can go into workshops, into the prison yard, into school, wherever they are, I went. And that was wonderful because then you could meet people in their ordinary life. You know, that kind of, you had to make an appointment with them. They would see you in the morning. I always made a point of being in the prison early in the morning when the guys were coming off lockup. So they came out, they saw you were there, they say, Melda, can I have a chat with you today? Or maybe to have a chat on the corridor. But there was that freedom of access, and that was fantastic.
And you say, because I read your book, Unheard Voices, Reflections of a Prison Chaplain, you say that was a good time to talk to them because despite the fact that they were in lockup for 14 hours, they were in good form.
They were in good form. That used to fascinate me. You know, I'm a morning grouch. I can be very grumpy in the morning. They would come out of cells full of beans and, you know, now I'm sure they weren't all that way, but many of them were. And there's a great sense of humour, and we'd meet and greet and how are things, and you know, we'd have an old chat, and they'd be heading to the school or to the yard, or, and then of course there were some who weren't heading anywhere, they were on lockup, so I always made sure to get to them during the day as well, because they were the most vulnerable ones and the ones that I really needed to see as well, you know. But I had that freedom of access, which was wonderful, and that was recognised by management in the prison, and it was good.
We'll come back to the prison in a moment, but first let's find out a little bit about you and your life.
Yeah.
So at 18 you joined the Presentation Nuns.
Correct.
And it was a closed order.
It was an enclosed order at the time, yeah. Even though we were apostolic, we were involved in education, but we were enclosed, we didn't go out, we didn't go home, so it was an enclosed order. And then Vatican II obviously released us, and I think I speak in the book about being released from the enclosure. I was like being released from prison, you know what I mean? So life has changed over the years, but when I joined it, that's the way it was.
That's a big deal, isn't it?
It is. At 18. Yeah. At 18, yeah. And you know something? It wasn't something I wanted to do. This is the interesting thing, because you know, at 18, you're full of the joys of spring and you want to live life to the full and you want to, you know, you had so many ambitions. But deep down, I knew I was being called to that way of life. And I took the plunge and went into it and never looked back.
Do you mind me asking you about the calling? Because yeah. I would have eye rolled at people. You know, I don't understand it. You know, so you got a strong calling.
That's how I understand it. Now, yeah. Maybe, and it's difficult to, I suppose, the mystery of life, the mystery of everything, but I honestly felt that that's what I was called to do in my life.
Okay.
And I said, I have to answer this call. It was like you have no option. And, I mean, I could have left if I, you know, but once I went in, and it wasn't easy in those times either, going into an enclosed order wasn't that easy. And I'd come from a family of six girls, so they were all out enjoying themselves, having their boyfriends and moving on, living life.
Getting married, children,
getting all those things. So for me, was very different, but you know, it gives you great freedom, because I really wanted, I suppose I wanted a relationship with God, number one, and number two, I wanted to serve people, and that's the way of life, and that's what happened. And
and the chaplaincy,
yeah,
when did you realise you wanted to do that? Because it's quite niche, and I would imagine a scary prospect.
For me, it was what I always wanted to do. It really was.
Was there a moment, or had you been in a prison?
No. Actually, when I was teaching, I remember, because I taught at primary and secondary level, I remember once when I teaching a little boy in senior infants, and he ended up in prison as a young guy. And I remember going to visit him in Mountjoy with his mother. And that was the first time I was ever in a prison. And I suppose it was the last time I was in either. But deep down, I suppose the congregation I belonged to were called kind of be on the margins, to be with people who are isolated, who are marginalised. And for me, I saw people in prison as the most marginalised among society, really. And I always had this feeling, I'd love to work in a prison. And I remember when I was working at second level, I was in Dungarvan at the time, teaching in a secondary school. I remember saying to myself, I'm really not needed here. There are lovely young teachers coming in here, they can do, I was teaching Irish, and he said, I don't need to be here at all. So I decided, I'd ask, would I go and work in a prison? And the congregation said, yes, you can. And then they decided they wanted me to do something else, and then I went into other kind of work for a while. But eventually they freed me up and I went off to the States and I trained, and then I went up to Toronto and worked in a women's prison there, and there was a job advertised for prison chaplaincy in Dublin. I flew home, applied for the job, did the interview and got it, and was absolutely on. Okay. Yeah.
Now I'm conscious that when we're talking about prisoners, we're saying they and they, and you know that thing, don't talk about us without
yes.
us.
Yeah.
But I feel that you're very qualified to represent them, and that was one of the things that a chaplain should do,
yeah,
is give a
yeah.
voice to people
absolutely.
Who don't have a voice.
Absolutely.
So yeah. You're comfortable with that.
I'm very comfortable with that, because yeah. when you talk about calling today, and I suppose as a chaplain, we were called to be a voice for those deprived of their freedom. That was written there. And when I left the prison that time, I said, now I can't be in there anymore, but I can be a voice for them. And I had worked with them for 20 years.
Yes.
I knew them so well. I knew their stories, their backgrounds. I knew their families. I knew their children. So I said, now is my time to try and be the voice.
You changed.
I did.
And sometimes reading the book, I think that you got more out of it than the people you helped
in some ways. I did.
But yeah. your perception of prisoners changed completely.
It did. And you see, I suppose as chaplain, anyway, you have to be non-judgmental, otherwise you can't work with them. And for me, chaplaincy was about relationships, building up relationships with people. And when you enter into a relationship with a person and you get to know him or her, that's when you really, you know, that's when you really get to know that person in depth. And people coming into prison, I remember, for example, when I was working in the prison, when you go in the morning, you get a list of all the people who'd come in the night before. And I would always make I'd always make a point of visiting the people who come in the night before. When I went into that cell, I didn't see a prisoner. I didn't see a criminal. I saw a person. Mm. And I wanted to relate to that man. I said, this man is someone's son, someone's husband, uncle, whatever it is. And to me, I wasn't too concerned why he was there, but I did want to get to know him. And I wanted him to realise that I was just an ordinary person like him. And, you know, sometimes when I'd be sitting there, I'd often say to myself, you know, whatever happened to this man, the same could have happened to me, but it didn't. And I saw them first and foremost as people rather than prisoners.
Oh, you're not curious about what they did and the victim and the victim's families?
Absolutely. But, you know, I had to get to know them first. And right. that was the main thing. And sometimes, you know, I'd read about them in the paper. They might say to me, Melda, look, I'm in the paper today. And I say, look, don't mind what's in the paper about you. The person who wrote that, have they ever met you? No, they haven't. But I'm meeting you now as a person. And of course, I was conscious of the fact that they didn't come in here as someone said, for saying their prayers. And I was always conscious too that there was a victim out there as well. And you know, many of these people themselves had been victims before they made other people victims as well. You know, that always struck me. I was conscious of that. But I was always conscious that, yeah, they have done wrong. And you know, they were very conscious of that themselves. And they would often say to me, but Imelda, I deserve to be in here. I did such and such a thing. But then when I would get to know them, and I would say, sometimes I wonder, you know, are they really guilty? What happened then that brought them to this dark place? Because it is a dark place when you've offended somebody, you've caused victimhood. And the back of my mind, I always knew that there were victims there as well. But for me, as a chaplain, I was working with the perpetrator.
Yes, and it's difficult for people listening, I would imagine, to humanise perpetrators, criminals, you know, lock them up, throw away the key.
Yes.
Some heinous crimes have been committed. Mm. You know, there's talk of people being evil and the only place for them is in prison.
Yeah.
But you have a different view.
I have a different view because I know them. I sat with them. I talked to them. I listened to them. I got to know their families. I got to know their background. And maybe I got some understanding as to what led them into crime. Mm. And that wasn't to condone what they had done. I could never condone it. You can't. And I could never, you know, I was always conscious somebody has suffered as a result of what this person has done. And people and men themselves were very conscious of that. And they said to me, but I deserve to be here, you know.
Okay. So, and this is where we get, and this is why your book is so strong. I suppose that you're on the outside now. Mm-hmm. You can be a little bit more honest, a little bit more strident. Mm. And you're calling for change. And
I'm
you're
calling for
a conversation.
I'm calling for, yeah.
Okay. The first word that comes into a lot of people's minds when they think of prison is locked up, incarceration.
Yes.
Depriving people of their freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But a mission statement for prisons is rehabilitation.
Correct.
Right. And that's where our system is failing miserably.
It is. And in spite of all the good work that's done in prison, I mean, I was part of the system myself for 20 years. So a lot of good work is done, a lot of good people in there doing their best. But the system itself has to be challenged. And the system needs to be brought into line with new psychological thinking, new understandings of human behaviour, new ideas about crime and punishment, all of that. And, you know, when we talk about punishment, the word I would love to substitute for punishment is reparation. If I do some harm to you, some wrong to you, I need to try and repair that damage. And locking me up in prison and told me to pay back my debt to society is putting me into a position where I cannot do that. But if I was in a position where I could make reparation and make up for the wrong I have done, and maybe sometimes victims might say, there's no way that person can make up to me. And that may be true, but at least give them a chance to do that.
So this, you're talking restorative justice.
I mean, talking about restorative justice. And, you know, I wasn't long in the prison when I was opened up to that whole concept.
And this is where perpetrators meet victims' families or victims, and they have a chat.
Yes, exactly. And it's facilitated. And it's the way forward because it's a more healing, restorative way. The present system is punitive. It's punishing. And punishing is a negative thing. And what I used to always say to the men in the prison, look, at, you know, you John, and you need to become the person you were that you were before this happened. You're more than your crime. And, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine later because we always end up talking about prison and prison we're talking about. And he told me a story I thought it was very interesting about this woman that he knew who had been very badly injured by a young guy driving a car and reckless driving. And she suffered life-changing injuries. And it took her about 2 years. And even after that, she still wasn't back to normal. But she said to herself, I want to meet the person who did this to me. And he was in prison at the time. And so she pursued it, and she went in and she said, I want to win for two reasons. Number one, I want him to see the damage he's done to me. That's the first thing. And number two, I want him to accept that his crime does not define who he is, that he can become the person he was before this happened. And I want him to know that, and I want him to know that that's what I want him to do. And she said, I'm not going to let what happened to me define who I am, and I don't want him to. I thought it was a wonderful...
Isn't that very magnanimous?
Absolutely tremendous.
Now, back to John. The problem is that from the reading of your book, and you have all the experience in the world, is that John, after his stint in prison, is a lesser person than he went in.
Yes.
Because of how he is treated in the prison.
Yeah.
So nothing, well, very little in the prison system, as you outlined it in the book, prepares John for life outside the prison.
Absolutely.
And as a result, what happens?
Mm. Yeah. You see, John is in the prison. He's told what to do, when to do it, and how to do it.
Right.
He makes no decision.
Right.
And really, part of growing up and part of, you know, living life is to make your own decisions. But he's not allowed to do that. So he comes out, he's been de-skilled, de-socialised. He comes out with the stigma of imprisonment.
Huge stigma.
Yeah. He doesn't leave that at the gate when he goes out. And, you know, how do you get a job? How do you get back into society? And depending too why you're in prison, you know, some people, I've always, you know, appealed to employers and to people, like, you know, be socially minded, give these people a chance. It's difficult.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know many people who have come out of prison and are living very, very useful lives now. Really are. I mean, I still keep in touch with them because I've known them for so long. Mm. So we meet for a cup of coffee or we ring each other on the phone, and some of them are living really, really good lives, gone back to their families. Some of them came out and they had no families. They were homeless and they've had to try. So it's very, very difficult. Mm. And I think, you know, we talk about the prison system, but I think we need to talk about the criminal justice system. You know, the prison system is only part of the whole system. You know what I mean? So from the
so people are being put into prison when they shouldn't be.
Exactly. Okay. And if you look at, but I think it's 78% of people in prison today are there for less than a year.
Right.
So that means they're not major criminals.
Yeah.
And you know the famous Whittaker report way back in 1985, Ken Whittaker heads up this report, and he said that prison should be used as a measure of last resort.
Okay.
And he said the first concern of the state should be the families and the children. Wasn't that excellent? And
only of those, the prisoners?
Yes. Right. And he said only those who had committed serious offences against the person or against property should be put in prison. And I would say we do need prisons, but for a small number
we'll
of people.
We'll get back to the families in a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to go just another statistic for people.
Yes.
Peter McFerry, you had a thing earlier on this year in Laois, I presume it was Portlaoise Prison or around that area or something. Peter McFerry was speaking at it and he quoted a statistic, 70% of people in Irish prisons have addiction issues.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I say one of the great health problems of today is addiction.
Okay. And how is that treated in prison?
Well, we have what they call addiction councils, but very few, so there's usually a waiting list. And I think that the prison environment is the wrong place. What we have always asked for over the years is treatment centres for people who suffer from addictions. And there's many different types of addictions. There's drug, there's sex, there's gambling, you name it. So I think we need drug treatment centres. And they will be more effective and probably less costly than putting them into prison in the first place. So when you look at the number of people in prison who suffer from addiction, Peter is saying 70% is correct. The number of people with mental health issues.
Yes.
They should be in mental health facilities. So everything, all the problems that society comes up against, we put them in prison.
And don't help them.
And then let them out again. And then when they come back
and
in again.
And they reoffend.
And they come back in again. I mean, when I went into prison first, I say, why are all these fellas coming back into the prison? And often I say to a man getting out, particularly a young fella, now if you come back, you please don't come back. And then he'd come back. And I say, what are you?
But here's the saddest thing. But the saddest thing in the book, and you've seen it obviously firsthand, is how for a lot of these men, prison is a better option than the outside world.
And that's
And that's because they're ill-equipped to cope with real life.
Ill-equipped to cope with real life, yeah. And when you look at the childhood trauma that some of these people have, and when you look at the areas of disadvantage, and so, you know, where they've come from, maybe with poor literary skills,
so they're marginalised.
They're marginalised
before they went to prison.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, the stigma of prison further marginalised them.
Absolutely.
And if you're the child of a person who's been to prison, you're more likely to go to prison.
That's right.
So
there's
a cycle.
And we create problems that we shouldn't be creating at all.
It's a mess.
It is.
And when you were in there, you could see that, but you have to work on, and that's the situation. Well, you know, the reality
when I was there,
of it, isn't it?
I was very conscious. I was like, yes. Why am I staying here? Why am I part of this system? But you know, you can work from inside. I could never speak to who I'm speaking now if I hadn't spent those 20 years.
No, I
there.
Know. Yes, okay. And you created Trail, for example.
I did, yeah, for the homeless getting prison. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's a big thing because housing first, which is the Peter McVerry mantra. You know, so that a lot of times you would have seen men leave, and as you say in the book, it didn't matter if they turned left or right. Because there's no home to go.
And you know, I used to see them going out that gate with a plastic bag on their back. That's what they were given, a plastic bag with a few bits and pieces in it. And often as I drove home from work at night, I might see the plastic bag thrown in the ditch because you go nowhere. So you're just going into a hostel, you're going someplace, and then you're back up in prison again. So it just, so, but being honest
so
with
Trail
you,
provided accommodation.
Trail provided accommodation. And our thing was, you know, each person had to be taken as an individual and there had to be, you know, what would suit him. So we got apartments in anonymous places and they went to an apartment, a single bed apartment or a double. So it gave them that dignity and that respect. They had a key worker working with them. They had a counsellor who'd come into the prisons for 6 months before they went out and work with them and then continue the work on the outside. So that, if it, and I was hoping that would be taken up. Now, it has been taken up in some small cases like Housing First and that, but we need many, many more.
I'm looking at, and depend on how many years, but the repeat of offenders or recidivism, as they call it, which is, it's a word difficult to say. And people switch off when they hear recidivism because they don't. This is people who leave prison and end up back in prison. That's basically it.
Yeah.
And the statistics are in Ireland up around 60%. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the Norwegian system, which is constantly cited as something to strive towards.
That's right.
And their rate is 20%.
Yeah.
One third of ours. Mm.
They have very, very few people in prison. Very, very few. And I was talking to a group of people from Sweden lately. And they said, once somebody goes into a Swedish prison, the first thing they look at is, how can this guy be prepared to work when he gets out? Yeah. How can he be equipped?
So immediately, but that's rehabilitation,
isn't
it?
That's what it is.
Yes.
So when he went, he didn't come back.
So I don't know if you're good on the history, but when did the prison system and the criminal justice system lose sight of that really important word, rehabilitation?
Well, the thing, what my Bible, if you like, was the Pritzker Report, which was published in 1985, and I still look at it. And then I look at but these reports are written, I believe the Pritzker Report was never really implemented and was never being reprinted. Mm. I got a copy of the Pritzker Report from a governor. I never gave it back to him because I wanted it.
Oh, there's a text in here from him. He's looking for his report back.
But I was so delighted to get it and I hold on to it. You know, but that was just left there. And way back in 2007, we set up a Commission on Restorative Justice. They published an annual final report in 2009. That's lying someplace. Okay. That hasn't been implemented either.
In all of these reports, have prisoners' families, victims' families, have they been consulted?
That is the problem. They're not really, you know. And what I'm calling for in the book, a national conversation with all voices are heard. The voice of victims, I think they have to be central to it. The voice of the perpetrators, their families, academics, prison personnel, chaplains, everybody. I think we all should have a voice in this. And what I would say too, we need to listen to each other. I mean, I'm one voice here today and you know, I'm privileged to be able to have this voice. But there are many people who never have it. I mean, I'm working with families of people now. The families of people in prison, they don't have a voice except when they ring me or come to our service.
They're so sad stories because the book's in two halves. The first is a sort of a memoir.
Yes.
And you lay out your polemic of what should change. Mm-hmm. And then there's these lovely, I don't know, vignettes. There's no names or detail, but these are things you've witnessed.
That's right.
Like two mothers waiting in the waiting room, visiting both sons are lifers, as they call them, and just the silence of it and the sadness of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's a number of stories about people getting really bad news while they're in. Absolutely. And you had to deliver that bad news about daughters dying, mothers dying, fathers dying.
I remember a man who, we were getting out of prison, he said, Imelda, I will never contact you again. I never want to hear from you again. And he said, it's nothing to do with you, but he said, I just want to get prison out of my system. Mm. And he remembered the day when I came to tell him that his little daughter had been killed. And that, he said, every time he saw me coming after that, he said, Imelda, I used to get a pain in my stomach when I saw you coming. Because and I remember telling him that day, and he thought I was coming to tell him his mother had died, was an elderly woman. And this, I remember him just literally getting up and banging the walls of the cell. That's all he could do. And then, so he associated me totally with that. He rang me once and that was it.
You say, you question whether it's political will for change. I suppose maybe there may not be, because society doesn't maybe realise that change is needed.
Yeah, that is the real problem. And I think we really need kind of, what would you say, courageous politicians who will take it on, who will listen to what the people are saying and bring about that change. It has to happen. I mean, I've met a number of ministers for justice over the years, because as chaplains we wrote an annual report every year, and we used to go public with, we would publish these reports, and then the minister used to meet us, and we really had good conversations, and we'd lay out our stall and he'd challenge us and we'd challenge him. I'm at the stage of life now where time is running out, and I really, you know, I would love to see some change. I really would, because I mean, when I left the prison, I said, and there were people in that prison when I started to work there, and they were still there when I was leaving, and they're still there.
Yeah.
And I said, for what? And they have done all they can.
Well, I think everyone should read this book. Like, I don't know what I was expecting, but it's a brilliant read, and it's a slight book, but it packs a big punch. and Unheard Voices, Imelda Wickham. And we happened upon you by accident, because you were mentioned in some article there, just by the way. So it's amazing to meet you, Imelda. And I hope that the change you call for in the book is that you get a chance to see some of it anyway. Mm. We've a lovely email from a former student there. I'll just give you the name, Claire Kavanagh. Claire Kavanagh Lannan. She taught me in national school, and I've never come across such a wonderful teacher who left me with unforgettable, happy memories. And they've stayed with me for 50 years. So I remember using the Irish she taught me in fifth class and in my leaving cert. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Thank you, Claire.
I had the privilege of working alongside Sister Imelda in Wheatfield Prison. She's a walking saint. Love to Imelda. That's from Brenda. So there you go. I hope we meet again, Imelda. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Grandma, good morning. Thank you very much. 5155 on RTE.ie. Listening to your guest, Imelda, she's an amazing woman, wise, kind and intelligent, and was obviously a lifeline to so many men who were in prison. She's fabulous, trying to change the prison system to reform it. Good luck to her, with an exclamation mark, says Orla in Cork. And she needs an awful lot of luck. Orla, but we wish her well. Now it's quiz time. Press that button there. Two quizzers standing by, and a prize, two nights stay for two in one of the 4-star I Knew A Collection hotels, the Hibernian Hotel in Kilkenny, Tullamore Court Hotel, Fairways Dundalk, Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, and any one of the Radisson Blue hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. You can find out more at inua.ie, inua.ie. Hello, Glenn.
Hello.
How are you?
How are you? You well?
Your day isn't going according to plan.
No, it didn't. My car got towed away. Oh. And you're going to ask why, and the answer is because it was driven by an idiot. I parked around the corner. I went for a coffee with my sister. Parked around the corner. I've actually parked there many times, but didn't realise you couldn't park there. There's no like pay and display. There's yellow lines to a point. So I park, make sure I don't park in the yellow line, all organised. We're about to leave. We were actually about to leave, and they said, "Ah, sod it, we'll have a coffee." So we had lunch, so we had another coffee. And then I see my car being towed around the corner. A car, very similar to mine, being towed past the window. And I thought, So I run out and I say, "Yeah, that's my car." And I'm glad I saw, because if not, I would have thought it was stolen, that I had a heart attack. So I checked it up and realised, you're not supposed to park there. So they very nicely towed a 10-minute walk away, clamped it, paid £125, waited an hour.
What a pain.
All self-deserved.
Yeah, I know. It's just the inconvenience of it, though.
But no, actually, I don't mind the inconvenience. It's the £125.
The financial inconvenience, as well as the time wasted and all that.
That's annoyed me.
And you parked there before and nothing happened, but you knew, having returned to the spot, that you did wrong, and that's the fun.
Yeah, it was my sister that said it to me. Says, "Look, there's a continuous white line, and we're half facing it, or, you know, adjacent to it." And I went, "Never noticed that before. All the times I've parked there."
Right.
Sanity.
Not the worst thing. Not the worst thing.
Not the worst.
No,
thing.
Not the worst thing. And you may win a prize. You know, your luck could change. Your luck could change. You're up against Connor Delap. How are you doing, Connor?
How are you doing, Ray?
Good to talk to you. So you're going from Buncrana to where?
Back home. I've actually made it back home today. So I teach in Buncrana, a primary school teacher, And I live just outside of Derry in a place called Eglinton. And if anyone's ever flown into Derry, they'll be sort of familiar where the airport is. We're close to the airport in Derry.
So you're back home in Derry. Sorry, couldn't resist it.
back home, yeah. It's where we live. Yeah. Both my wife and I are originally Letterkenny natives, so we're Donegal born and bred, but living in Derry.
Okay. Primary school teacher, what class?
I teach third class this year, right?
Ah, yeah. That's a nice age, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the class I have this year, lovely, I have to say, especially since I'm on the radio.
And they're still compliant. They may not know what that means, but they're...
No, they're great. They have a great bunch. Yeah.
And your son, is he in third or fourth or fifth or sixth or what?
Well, you see, my own children go to school in the north. So I have four children. My eldest is at grammar school and my second child turns 11 today.
Yes, happy birthday.
And he's in his final year of primary school, which they call primary seven. And then I've a daughter in primary five and a son in primary two, so... Have a good spread.
Yeah. So Daniel is celebrating his birthday today, so we say happy birthday, Daniel. And good luck on the exams. He does his sort of entrance into secondary school exams this weekend or around, so good luck to him on that.
Yeah, so slightly different, again, to the system that I'm teaching in myself, in that he does a transfer test, and the first of those starts this Saturday, and then he has the three following Saturdays, who's right up to the 3rd of December on Saturday mornings. Now, they are optional, but if you want to go to grammar school, it's the only entry process into a grammar school, or you could choose to enter a secondary school. And
it's a very early introduction to exams, isn't it? A very early introduction to exams.
It's very early, yeah. It's like leaving cert for 11-year-olds, really. You know, it's a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wouldn't be something I would have been familiar with myself growing up in Letterkenny, but
we're
sort of getting used to it as parents.
Okay, so lads, a bit of pressure for you now. Three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. If you go for a shorter clip, it's more difficult, so you get 2 points. Whoever scores the most on points is the winner. However, if it's a draw, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both, Glenn and Connor. Here we go. Radio, Glenn, the year is 2018, 4 years ago.
Okay.
And we're starting at the movies. Glenn, so do you want to go long or short?
Go short for this.
Short, okay. This film once starred Barbra Streisand, but the 2018 remake stars Lady Gaga in that role alongside another actor who also directed. Can you name the movie? Here's your short clip.
And you're the Chris Christopherson character?
I mean, well, there's been three of them. James Mason did it, Chris Christopherson did the last one. Yeah. So it's a, you know, it's a sort of a version of that guy.
Well?
A Star Is Born.
Yes, Bradley Cooper there. You get 2 points. Connor, 2018, the movies, long or short?
I'll have to go short.
Okay, 2018 movie was partly filmed around Dublin. It follows a young woman as she befriends a lonely widow who becomes disturbingly obsessed with her. Can you name the movie? And here we go.
I want to talk.
Then talk to your daughter.
I can't. She does not understand.
What? What doesn't she understand?
Any ideas? That's a tough one.
I know, I haven't seen it anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Ray, I'm going to have to...
Yeah, Greta.
That one. I wouldn't have a clue.
Greta. That was a tough one. Okay.
It's called what?
Greta.
Okay, no, I definitely didn't know it.
Okay. Now, Glenn, to you, music from 2018. What do you want to go, long or short?
Long.
Long, okay. This American singer once played Cat Valentine in a Nickelodeon TV series. Can you name her or the song she's singing?
One taught me love.
It is.
Ariana Grande.
It is. It is, yeah. Look at you. Okay, you get a point for that. Connor, that puts you under a little bit of pressure. Actually, a lot of pressure. So do you want to go long or short?
I think Glenn's really putting it up to me here. I'm going to have to stick with short.
You will, yeah.
Run away with it.
Okay. Once part of girl group Fifth Harmony, this Cuban-born American voice coach released this song in tribute to her home country. Can you name the song or the singer?
Baby, American girl group, aren't they?
Fifth Harmony, Cuban-born American voice coach.
Is that Camila Cabello? Is that
yes, Camila yes, Cabello? Very done.
She's,
yeah,
she's Fifth Harmony, yeah.
Yeah, and the pronunciation's very good. Very,
oh,
yeah.
Well.
You don't get any extra points for pronunciation, but you do get 2 points. Well done. Havana was the song. So Cuba, she was paying tribute to Cuba. Okay, so 2 plays 3. Now, Glenn, if you go short and get it right, Connor can't catch you.
Yeah.
If
What's
you go, if it's news and current affairs. If you go long and get it right, Connor can go short, get it right, and it's even, yeah, brings us to a tiebreak question. So what do you want to do?
I go for the 2 point question.
Okay, news and current affairs. On the 19th of May 2018, this couple married in St. George's Chapel at Windsor. Can you name them?
I need to do this for my family.
Harry
is
and Meghan?
Is it not a surprise to anybody?
Yeah, there you go. Really, yes, Harry and Meghan. Yes, it is Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, the most talked about couple, yes, in the world. You get 2 points. Brings you up to 5.
Then.
And Connor, you can't catch him. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. Really well done.
Yeah. Connor, listen, enjoy Daniel's birthday celebrations, and we're going to send you out one of the brand new Ray D'Arcy Show Keep Cups.
Oh, thanks very much.
Which
Ray,
is handy
you.
For you, because you'll be able to bring it to the staff room and everyone will know it's yours because you're the only person who will have one. Okay, great to talk to you,
bye.
Connor. Mind yourself.
Bye.
See you. Bye. Bye. Glenn, well done.
Woohoo. Thank you.
Woohoo. It's right. You can go to inew.ie now and decide which of the many 4-star hotels in their collection you're going to go to. Inew.ie, inua.ie. Well done, Glenn. Good talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Have
bye,
a good
bye,
day.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we'll be chatting to Owen Colfer in a moment, but just before that, we've partnered with the RTE Radio 1 5th Annual Folk Awards. It's taking place Thursday night next in Vicar Street. Still tickets available. And we're going to be playing one of the best original folk track nominees each day until next Thursday. Just to give you an idea of who's in the running. And today, it's Now You See It by Susan O'Neill. We've had Susan on the show. She duetted with Mick Flannery. Did a great album called In the Game. But this is Susan on her own. Now You See It. One of the nominees for Best Original Folk Track in RTÉ Radio 1's 5th Annual Folk Awards. Here it is. That's nice. Susan O'Neill, the first of the nominations for the Best Original Folk Song. 5 more to come before next Thursday. Owen Colfer joins us in studio. How are you doing, Owen?
I'm doing great, Ray. I saw Susan recently in a concert. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
She's absolutely brilliant.
Great voice.
Yeah, great voice, a great performer.
Because your brother is a singer-songwriter.
My brother, Niall, is a singer-songwriter. Yeah, he's got another album coming out early next year. And my son now has followed him in. So he's in a band called Bell's Favour, and they've just done their first little...
How do you feel about that?
Good, because they're electronic drums.
Right, okay.
So he can't hear them. But
right.
He loves it. It's kind of become a large part of his life, that's Sean.
Great to see you. Like, the main reason you're here is just to tell us that the new Wexford Arts Centre is going to be open this Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
By Wexford Mayor Maura Bell.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that's close to your heart. Why?
Yeah. Well, I was on the board for a while. My first play ever was on there. I've done loads of plays there. I've seen 1,000 gigs there. My dad was on the board. And my dad was an artist, a painter, a writer, and all sorts. He was kind of a Renaissance kind of guy, and he gave us all one talent each. So we are half a talent.
So writing, I presume, was yours.
Well, two of us got that between us. So Eamon got half and I got half. But,
right.
But my brother Niall is assistant county archaeologist in Dublin here, and he is going to speak at the launch of the gallery because they're named the Dr. Billy Colfer Gallery, which is my dad.
Right, tell us a bit about your dad. So you were brought up on Hook.
We were brought up
Peninsula.
In between, yeah, on the Hook and in Wexford Town. And my mum and dad were, I suppose you would call them liberals. They were all into their arts and their music and their writings. And my mother was an actress and also a writer with her women's group, Pilgrim Soul. And they had a radio show for a while. They wrote books. They put on shows.
What year was that? When are we talking?
Well, I think the radio show would have been in the 70s.
Wow.
It was like the outside broadcast thing came down for the festival.
Ah, yes,
and
yes,
they
yes.
gave it to my mother.
Right.
And we still have the cassettes, C90s, if you can remember them. And she broadcast her love of poetry and arts and music. And she died actually 2 months ago. So it's a great loss to the town. So we've included a lot about in the exhibition about her, including a beautiful portrait my dad did of her in the late 70s. which is going to take pride of place there. So anyone who's around Wexford at 3 p.m. or come at 2 for the opening and come at 3 for the gallery launch.
The two of them sound amazing.
Yeah, we were so lucky. I thought everyone's parents just, you know, had art, you know, supplies in the corner and loads of whatever. And I thought, you know, it was natural for Billy Roach to call in with his manuscript. I thought everyone's dad did that. So we were really, really fortunate. And we all have the arts in us somewhere, all the boys.
And then Hook Peninsula.
Hook Peninsula, as you know, yeah. It's a fantastic, it's just, you can just run wild. It's like being on Lord of the Flies for the summer. It's brilliant. And if there's a better place to grow up, you know, I don't know it. So we had a great life growing up in the 70s and 80s.
So both of them gone now.
Yeah, both gone, yeah. It's sad. I still feel this pull every now and then in my head that says, oh, you better ring Mam about that, or you're going down tomorrow. And then you realise, no, you're not going down. And it is very, very sad. And I was watching some ad yesterday on the television last night, and it's about, maybe you saw it, it's about this mother who's been moved house.
Oh, yes, recreated. It's the banks, yes, they recreated the room, yes.
Oh my God, that's the most emotional thing I've ever seen. I was quite taken aback by how sudden it overwhelmed
you,
me.
Yeah. You
know, just looking at this ad, which 2 months ago I would have thought, that's, you know, that's very sentimental.
Yeah.
But now it's taken on a whole different hue.
And was it quick in the end, or what happened?
It was a slow process. It was aphasia, which is a form of dementia. But in the end, yes, it was quite quick. The nurse sat us down and said, lads, it'll probably be a couple of weeks of this, you know, almost catatonic. And then an hour later, you know, she was gone, or 2 hours later.
And as you describe her, such an energetic woman, so creative and...
Yeah, and positive.
Yeah.
And she had a way of plumbing everybody into her dramatic productions. I remember my wife Jackie standing there in this Victorian dress, and you could see look on her face, how did this happen? What am I doing here? But she loved it, and Mam loved Jackie, and Jackie loved her. So, you know, we did do anything, and we would have done anything. I remember doing a play for her, and everyone else was getting paid, and Jackie and I were promised a cheese sandwich. and we didn't realise it was shared, like it was a shared cheese sandwich. But you do it because, you know, you just want to be in her company. She was a great person.
Yeah. What are you working on? What are the twins back? Or
I just have a book out with Chris Judge, which is called Cloud Babies.
Yeah.
And it's about the struggle Chris and his family had with their little girl Juno, who got very ill and had to go into hospital in Crumlin for a long time. And I had been thinking of a story as a teacher where sometimes kids kind of just disappear out of your class and the other kids don't know what's happened. And when they come back 6 months later, everyone's moved on, like they've stopped watching Barney. You know, they're all watching Disney Princesses now, and the little kid doesn't know, and they feel very out of place. So I was writing that story, and Chris was going through this other thing, and we put them both together in a book called Cloud Babies. So that's out right now.
So he illustrated it and you wrote it.
Yeah, it was amazing because I had been writing the story, and then I realised Chris was going through it. So I called him up and said, you know, is it too soon, or would you like to do it? And he luckily agreed. And we are shortlisted for the Irish Book Awards, if anyone wants to give us a vote there. And yeah. I don't like shouting out other people, but I am launching PJ Lynch's book at 6 o'clock in Hodges Vigus. If you're around the town. And I'm only joking. I love you, PJ. Yeah. You know I'm joking.
Yeah.
But there's more to come. It's worse. That's the nicest joke I'll make in the launch.
So you've worked with Oliver Jeffers in the past.
Yeah.
And then you have your adult illustrator who is.
Well, we have a fellow called Giovanni Rigano from Italy, and he does the illustrations for the graphic novel series. The first one was Illegal, and we have one coming next year called Global, which is about global warming affecting the most at-risk children in the world, first and worst, and they had nothing to do. Usually the countries involved had nothing to do with global warming. So that's an interesting one.
Isn't that the message that's coming out of COP27?
Yeah.
You realise that
reparations.
Like we're culpable and they're suffering.
Yeah, but that's the way it's always been, I think. You know, it's always the poorest nations who bear the brunt of all these things, and this book explores that. It's about a kid in the Bay of Bengal, and like their islands, his island was literally, you know, submerged, and now he's living on the foreshore on the mainland, and they can't even find place to put their sleeping bags. It's all these horrible situations.
What are the chats you have with your children about climate change? And
you see, you're making the assumption that my kids talk to me. No, I think that we try and lead, not lead, but, you know, we're not, we just try and do our best, and we try to have the lowest carbon footprint we can. But it's really hard. And I mean, I have to go, I go to London all the time touring, yeah, you know, yeah. And I was listening the other day to an interview with that Swedish young girl.
Greta Thunberg.
She was on Radio 1, and she doesn't fly anywhere.
No.
And I felt really bad.
Like, she was invited to talk to the UN and she went over in a yacht.
Yeah.
I Am Greta is an amazing, it's on Disney Channel. It's an amazing documentary.
Yeah.
She is, there's something very special about her. We were talking to John Sweeney the other day and she's sort of passing on the baton, but he was saying there are loads of Greta Thunbergs out there. I don't think there are.
No.
People like her only come along every once in a generation.
I think you're right. And she was so, when she was speaking, she was so self-assured. She didn't put a foot wrong. She didn't repeat herself. She didn't stammer. She was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I thought if that was me, I would be, you know, I'd be, you knowing, as you can hear me, you know this, you know yourself. But she was so clear and she got her message across so well.
Yeah. So you don't have chats about global warming?
Well, we do.
No, I'm joking. Yeah. I'm joking.
Not anymore. Well, Finn is 25.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I'd have to ring him and say, can you come out of that club? I want to talk to you about global warming.
And you'll be told where to go.
yeah.
So the new Wexford Arts Centre officially launched this Saturday from 2 o'clock. The Wexford Mayor, Maura Bell, will be there. And there's an exhibition featuring...
Yeah, Dr. Billy Colfer, the one that's dad. So that's at 3 o'clock for
3 o'clock.
Launch.
Okay. Owen, great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.